This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
With more than half of ballots counted from Wednesday's poll, Angola's ruling party looks to be on track to win this latest national election. But the opposition is questioning the tallies released by the Electoral Commission so far, saying their independent counts give them better results.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Luanda. Details next. Also, fueled by increasing internet use and technological advancement, the Ugandan government is grappling with a rise in human trafficking. And Boko Haram militants launch attacks not only in Nigeria, but in neighboring countries as well. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Angola's ruling MPLA party has won the country's general election with 61% of votes, extending its hold on power and ensuring that Defense Minister João Lourenço will be the country's next president. Before final results were announced today, the opposition had questioned the early tallies released by the Electoral Commission, saying their independent counts gave them better results. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Luanda.
Angola's powerful ruling party has hailed provisional election results that showed that it has triumphed again in the polls, extending its rule beyond its already impressive 42 years. But the leading opposition party, the National Union for the Total Independence of Angola, says their independent vote count tells a different story. UNITA has not said whether it will contest results in court. The MPLA has dominated all aspects of public life in Angola, and is accused of plundering state resources in the oil-rich nation. During the campaign, opposition parties accused the ruling party of using government resources for campaigning. The MPLA has denied irregularities, and observers have largely praised the poll for being peaceful and orderly. On Friday morning, state television praised the poll and quoted voters who effusively did the same. But in parts of the capital, voters questioned the initial results. Luanda province is the largest, and initial results there gave the ruling party a razor-thin 50% share. Luciano Joaquim, 47, a resident of the opposition-heavy Kazanga neighborhood, said he believes that the opposition performed better than the initial results indicate. Still, as of Friday morning, large swaths of the capital had yet to be counted. I disagree with these results announced by the Electoral Commission, he told VOA. I disagree because during the campaign on state television, people said they wanted change. It's clear that Angolan voters are slowly chipping away at the hegemony of the powerful MPLA, which has ruled Angola as a de facto one-party state since independence from Portugal in 1975. In 2008, the party won 82% of the vote. In 2012, 72%. Since 1979, one man has led the party and the nation, President José Eduardo dos Santos, who is stepping down at 74 amid rumors of poor health. He will continue to lead the party, but his defense minister, João Lourenço, is now poised to take the reins as Angola's president, its first new leader in 38 years. Anita Powell, VOA News, Luanda, Angola.
European police have cracked down on a long-running prostitution ring that preyed on young Nigerian women. Arrests have been made in several countries and more are expected as the investigation continues. Word of arrests came from Europol Police Agency. Reporter Stephanie Vandenberg is following the story from The Hague. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
Europol announced today that the Spanish National Police and the Finnish Police arrested 15 people who are suspected of running a sex trafficking ring, taking young women from Nigeria and forcing them into prostitution in Europe and especially Spain. The victims are generally young women that are recruited in Nigeria and they were trafficked to Spain via Italy and then forced into prostitution, mostly in tourist hotspots of Benidorm and Malaga, but also in Madrid and Barcelona.
Any idea how many young women were involved?
Well, they safeguarded 16 victims, they said, so that's going to be the tip of the iceberg, probably the ones that they found on location when they did the raids. From the way Europol is describing it, it seems to be a ring that's been operating for a long time and that kind of had the whole process covered, from recruiting them in Nigeria to trafficking them through Libya and Niger, to getting them to Italy, to then getting them to Spain and into the prostitution. So I think to set up that kind of network takes time, and so we can safely say that there'll probably be a lot more victims, but 16 victims were safeguarded, in the words of Europol.
Did they say whether these young women came across the Mediterranean with all the other migrants that have been making the journey, or did they use some other means?
No, they didn't specifically say they crossed the Mediterranean, but basically the route from Libya to Italy is through the Mediterranean, so there's really no other way that they would have gotten there. So this is probably part of that stream as well.
So how did Finnish police get involved in this?
Well, the alleged ringleader, a woman, was apparently living in Finland, and while the Spanish police was investigating this ring after asylum services flagged up two Nigerian young women who they suspected were being forced into prostitution, they saw these connections with Finland, and then that's where an organization like Europol comes in. It makes the link between the Spanish police and the Finnish police so they can coordinate this action and arrest the alleged ringleader in Finland.
Do we know the identities or the nationalities of those allegedly operating this ring?
They don't specifically say, but from the fact that they have this whole setup running from Nigeria to Spain, and what you see in these past trafficking rings is that it's often also Nigerians running those rings, also in the destination country, so also in Spain. But in this case, they don't specifically say.
Did they give the young women phony passports or phony documents?
Yes, they did. What they did is they specifically urged the women that they were trafficking to, when they got to Spain, to ask for asylum so that they would have kind of a valid reason to be there if they were questioned by the police. And they were also provided with fake documentation for the request for asylum. In January already, the International Organization for Migration warned that number of women coming in from Nigeria had doubled from the last year, and that this is really an increase that they're seeing, and this route is being used a lot. So I think what we'll see is probably more of these kinds of investigations, where more of these sex trafficking rings will be dismantled, because this is a very kind of classic way of sex trafficking. Nigeria has been at the center of a lot of these things for years now.
That's reporter Stephanie Vandenberg from The Hague. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. The Ugandan government is grappling with a rise in human trafficking. Officials say the practice is fueled by increasing internet use and technological advancement. Investigations have revealed that some victims of trafficking pass through neighboring Kenya. Catherine Nambi has the story from Kampala.
High unemployment in Uganda is causing many people to search for jobs abroad. But some are at risk of falling prey to human traffickers, especially women and children. They are promised well-paying jobs and a better life. Kuwait, Malaysia, United Arab Emirates, Oman, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar top the list of destinations for trafficked Ugandans. Annette Namuli, who is 20 years old, describes her ordeal with traffickers in Oman.
I went as a hairdresser. I reached Oman. They told me all your certificates for hairdressing aside. You're now a housemaid. I was shocked. She told me you have to work. You entered in the airplane thinking that it's for your father or your mother. You are going to work.
Moses Binoga is the coordinator of Uganda's anti-human trafficking task force. He says between January and July of this year, they managed to intercept over 140 potential victims of human trafficking.
Majority of the registered victims were younger ladies trafficked to the Middle East countries, mostly for labor exploitation. But occasionally, some of them have been subjected to sexual exploitation. The potential victims were intercepted at the various exits of the country, including Entebbe Airport. Another group of over 40 ladies were intercepted at Jomo Kenyatta International Airport in Nairobi. Some of those intercepted at Jomo Kenyatta Airport were found with either forged immigration stamps or passports which do not belong to them.
Agnes Igoye is the Deputy National Coordinator of Uganda's Prevention of Trafficking in Persons Department. She says human trafficking in Uganda has become more sophisticated with the use of technology.
Everybody has a cell phone. Everybody is connected on the internet. Now people are looking for their own jobs within the internet, and traffickers know that. So they will entice you with everything. We've had survivors who have been recruited through Facebook. I had a victim where a friend who was in the Middle East was enticing her that there's a job in Dubai. And what was she posting on her Facebook page? Pictures as if she's in an office. But that's not what she was doing. She was into prostitution. And the traffickers made her do that to recruit other people so that they can release her after a long time in sexual exploitation. So that is the troubling trend.
Martin Wandera is the Director of Labor in Uganda's Ministry of Gender, Labor and Social Development. He says although human trafficking is on the rise, Ugandans have the right to seek employment in other countries, but he wants them to be careful to avoid the traps of human traffickers.
Carry out sufficient background check about the company that is a prospective employer, and the reason is to guard against falling into hands of traffickers. Under the employment regulations, we license recruitment companies. So before one goes, I would like to advise that you check with the ministry to establish whether the company that is acting as an intermediary between the worker and the company abroad is a licensed company.
A recent Uganda police report indicates that over 700 people, mainly women and young girls, were trafficked to destinations in the Far East and Middle East to work as sex slaves and domestic servants over the past year. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
In northeastern Nigeria, a truck convoy was attacked yesterday by Boko Haram militants, leaving five people dead. AFP quotes local sources as saying the convoy was being escorted by the military and militias when it was attacked at Marali village. That's in Konduga district of Borno State, 27 kilometers from Maiduguri. Four of the five victims were members of the local militia. The other was a driver. Two soldiers were wounded. Moreover, Boko Haram militants have launched attacks not only in Nigeria, but neighboring countries as well. In Niger, Difa region, for example, at least 540 civilians have been killed, kidnapped or wounded by Boko Haram since early 2015. That's triple an earlier estimate released by the UN in January. AFP reports the deadliest attacks occurred along Niger's border with Nigeria and on Lake Chad. The Difa region in southeast Niger is home to more than 300,000 refugees, many of them displaced because of Boko Haram attacks. You were listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Angola's ruling MPLA party has won the country's general election with 61% of the vote. Fueled by increasing internet use and technological advancement, the Ugandan government is grappling with a rise in human trafficking. And Boko Haram militants launch attacks not only in Nigeria, but in neighboring countries as well. And for more information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The Tanzanian government has given the UN 7 days to start the process of repatriating Burundian refugees. This follows reports that more Burundian refugees are calling for repatriation. Reporter Moses Havyarimana has the story.
According to the Tanzanian authorities, more than 8,000 Burundian refugees have been registered with the UN Refugee Agency to voluntarily repatriate back to Burundi. However, The refugees in Tanzanian camps are said to have been rioting due to the delays in repatriation that have been blamed on the UNHCR. Tanzania is hosting the largest number of Burundian refugees, which is estimated at about 200,000 people. Tanzania's Home Affairs Minister Mwigulu Nchemba says the process to repatriate the refugees should start in about 1 week.
I was telling UNHCR, why should we quarrel with the people who are willing, volunteering to go back to their home? Why do we retain them until they riot? So that was the reason, for sure. It is within the provision that refugees, once they demand to be taken back homes, it is within the provision that they need to be facilitated to go.
He says there are long queues of refugees registering to repatriate back to Burundi. The UNHCR mandate for voluntary repatriation has been extended to include providing protection and assistance to refugees even after they return home. The UNHCR officials in Tanzania declined to comment on the issue. Burundi Justice Minister Laurentine Kanyana says Burundi is safe and willing to receive all those who fled the country.
And we invite them to turn back to home because they will be protected in their body and their property. There are people who are saying that they cannot turn back to Burundi because they are searched by judicial services. We want to say that only 34 persons searched because of their participation in the coup.
Hundreds of thousands of Burundians fled to neighboring countries after political violence broke out in April 2015. That's when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term, something the opposition called illegal. The regional mediated inter-Burundi peace dialogue is set to resume next month in Arusha. Former Tanzanian president and facilitator of the dialogue, Benjamin Mkapa, met Burundi government officials last week. Mkapa urged the government to release political prisoners and cancel arrest warrants for some opposition members. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
It may be a while before Sierra Leonean officials can finalize the death toll from August 14th mudslide in Freetown. Right now, they have confirmed about 500 were killed when heavy rains washed away part of Mount Sugarloaf. It remains unclear how many bodies remained buried and how many residents in the Regent area escaped. Thousands are homeless, and hundreds of children are now orphans. Reporter Kelvin Lewis is following developments. He told VOA's Jody Kapowa that search efforts have come to a halt.
The latest situation is that they have stopped looking for bodies because the stench is overpowering. Now they are looking at how to settle the people who have been displaced.
So what happens now? Is it basically heavy machinery coming in trying to clean up the situation? Because the current situation can't remain. It's got to be a health problem.
Exactly. So they have brought in health officials to fumigate because that was one of the requests by the men who were operating the caterpillars. So the health authorities have since gone there. They have sprayed some chemicals around. But like I said, they do not believe that anybody could be alive anymore. And digging up body parts is also not too good for them because they have not been recovering whole bodies anymore. They have only been recovering body parts, arms, legs, torsos, headless torsos. So basically, that operation is about closing now. And I'm not aware of the next stage, but geoscientists have come in from Britain and from Spain. They are helping the government to look at the other threatening cracks on the hill, and they are looking at whether to relocate more people or move them out of the area to see what next can be done in that area.
So they're concerned about another mudslide from Mount Sugarloaf?
Yes, because there was another one, but it was behind, and that one was not fatal because it did not occur in an area where people were staying. It occurred behind a chimp sanctuary, but it's also on the same hill. There are concerns that there are cracks on the mountain. They have brought in these experts to help them determine whether these cracks would also lead to another landslide or mudslide. That is what they are trying to determine now.
Kelvin, what's being done for the survivors? We understand that hundreds of children may have lost their parents and thousands of people are now homeless.
As far as I know, a lot of humanitarian assistance is being provided for them. It's a pitiful sight. They are now housed in school rooms, in school classrooms, and in mosques. And the children have been taken over by Don Bosco homes. And it's pitiful, Joe. There was an eight-month-old baby who they don't know any relatives, they don't know the mother, and she was found in the river floating with her two fingers in her nostrils. That was on the very Monday that the incident happened. So you have quite a variety of these children, and UNICEF is stepping in. There is some aid that has come in from mainly the British to help care for them.
Let me ask you about the situation regarding Mount Sugarloaf. It sounds like they're very concerned this could be an ongoing problem. Is there any talk of removing homes from there for good? In other words, not allowing any further settlements by the base of Sugarloaf?
Yes, Joe. When we spoke to the minister, one of the main communication people in the team for the response, he told us about 21.9 hectares. If this there was anything to go by, it would mean a far larger area. And they had demarcated an area where they had asked people to move out. But that was only temporary so that the investigations continue. There have been drone flights around the mountain and a lot more cracks have developed. There is actually the feeling that there is a threat to the mountain. But it is left to experts to now tell us whether they are threatening or whether there are normal cracks that would continue to be there for the next 50 or 100 years.
That's reporter Calvin Lewis in Freetown, Sierra Leone. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapawa. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
The three-day online auction was the first of its kind since South Africa banned the domestic trade in rhino.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.